recently, so I'm going to go ahead and start with our initial roll call. 007 Bonds. One Got Bail. I'll ask everybody to place their phone on mute until they called their name, then they can respond. Whether they're here or not, I'll make sure I give everybody plenty of time, but I don't want to go through this distortion issue. Go ahead.
Have also everybody turn off any background noise.
Correct, yeah.
And just as
basically, I hate to be this way, but unless spoken to, don't speak. I'll make sure everybody gets an opportunity to voice any concerns they have, but I don't want this chiming in back and forth sort of thing like we've had before, so.
And as an FYI, okay, this is Steve. If you press *6, that will mute you.
Good to know. Thanks, Steve.
Yep.
So I've got a no, not here on 007, not here on Got Bail, or one Got Bail. First Patty. Out bail bonds.
Patty,
pardon me.
Patty is here.
Okay. Thank you very much. How about first out bail bonds? Second Chance.
Tony Choate is here with Second Chance.
Sportsman's bail bonds. A1 bail bonds. AA Rocky Mountain bail bonds.
Cheryl Condor with AA Rocky Mountain bail bonds.
AAA bail bonds.
Wayne Carlos present.
Aladdin bail bonds.
Oscar Gonzalez, I'm on the call.
All out bail bonds. Eight bail bonds.
Yes, Rob, with eight bail bonds.
Available bail bonds.
Vivian White, available bail bonds.
B&B bail bonds. Bad Boys bail bonds. Beehive bail bonds. Bonds Are Us.
Allie with Bonds Are Us.
Breaking Bad bail bonds.
Christy Ellis, Breaking Bad bail bonds.
Peter Post. Jailbuster bail bonds.
Matthews bail bonds.
How about Dewey's bail bonds?
Dominic Sinone, Dewey's bail bonds.
Fast and Furious bail bonds. Freedom bail bonds. Gordon's bail bonds. Granite bail bonds. High End Mike's. Lucky bail bonds.
Dion Flannery, Lucky bail bonds.
Massey's bail bonds.
Joshua Massey, Massey's bail bonds.
Pappas, bail bonds?
Skip.
Price, bail bonds? Steve's bail bonds?
Clyde Stevens, Steve's bail bonds.
UNF Basin bail bonds?
Patty Reed, UNF Basin bail bonds.
Utah bail bonds? Extreme bail bonds? For anybody who may have joined the call during the roll call, I'll do a roll call again at the end of the meeting for anybody that may have joined during the process here to make sure that you get credit for being here. I'll welcome everybody to the bail bond board meeting for the city of Utah, the last meeting of 2020. And first thing we have, Steve, I believe you have an announcement for us.
Well, we already did it. It was just about muting your lines, so we're all good okay. with that. Again, with that phone number, or with that phone ringing, let's do a *6 to mute your lines and unmute. And then if you would do a roll call of board members and department staff, that would be awesome, too.
Certainly. All right, I'll do a board call or a roll call of board members to start with. I know Dominic is here. I do know that Tony was here, I remarked. Is Lieutenant Ken Jones here? Is Chad Woolley with us? I believe I heard Bonnie was here. Bonnie, are you here? Kurt, Oda, I heard you.
Here.
Is Reed Stringham with us?
Yeah, here.
Okay, so looks like we're missing Ken Jones, Chad Woolley, and Bonnie Johnson.
Do we have a quorum?
This is Perry Davalos. You need 4 for a quorum.
I believe we do. Now I'll go through the department staff. Is Tanji Northrup with us? Steve, I know you're here.
I am.
Tracy Klausmeier, are you with us?
I am.
And is Danny Schoenfeld with us?
Yep, present.
Okay. Okay, moving on. I'm going to read the anchor location determination. So, in accordance with Utah Code 52-4-207-4, as chair of the Bail Bond Oversight Board, I, Clay Carlos, determined that holding a meeting at an anchor location presents a substantial risk to health and safety to those who may be present at the anchor location due to the current COVID-19 pandemic. Pursuant to Code 52-4-2075, this determination is valid for 30 days from the date of this determination, dated the 8th day of October 2020, signed by me, Clay Carlos, Chair, Bail Bond Oversight Board. Now, I have had a chance to read the minutes, and they look quite extensive. I hope others have as well. Has anybody had a chance to review the minutes and interested in proposing an adoption of the minutes?
Move to approve, Kurt Oda.
Okay.
Second, Dominic.
Dominic seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Looks like we have, I believe, five ayes and zero noes.
I think it's probably only four and zero because Reed is not voting.
You're absolutely right. I'm sorry. I counted Reed. It's probably an aye. So. Although I think he might, if he had a chance to vote, I bet he would approve. All right, there's no need for an executive session. Let's move down. Tracy, I don't believe we have any kind of an enforcement report, so we may move on to our quarterly accounting for the administrative account, and that'll be from Danny, I believe.
Yeah, thank you. Right now, as of through the third quarter, which would be October 1, we have $4,100 that we've collected in revenue. We've expended expenditures of $5,300. And last year, we closed with a beginning balance of $31,176. So I'm happy to answer any other additional questions if you have them.
I don't, but I'll open up the call to anybody else that may have any questions for Danny.
Hey, really quick, Danny, this is Dominic Sinoni. What are the bulk of the expenditures?
Out of right now, it's mostly has been personnel expenditures out of this current fiscal year.
For example?
Just personnel for getting the group or any time that we devote to staff time work, we charge that's essentially it. There's no other expenses as of this first quarter. We haven't had anything else come through as of right now.
Got it. Thanks.
If there are any other questions, then we'll sum it up. And Danny, I very much appreciate your report, and we'll move on down the agenda here.
Thank you.
New business. Oh. We have some proposed amendments. Oh, go ahead. Anybody?
I think we need to have a concurrence or an approval of the report.
Oh, okay. Does anybody like to adopt the or accept the approval of the administrative account report that we got from Danny?
Move to approve. This is Cardona.
Hey, Kurt.
Second, Dominic Sinoni.
Dominic seconds. All in favor? Aye.
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 Anybody opposed? It looks like we got an all in favor vote for no opposed. Track, by the way. All right, we'll move to new business. Again, so proposed amendments to section 31A-35-404 and also 406. And Reed will help explain a little bit of that. I was unfortunately not here for a large part of that discussion in last month's meeting, but I do have some paperwork here in front of me that'll help me somewhat understand it. But if Reed will help explain it to the rest of us, I'd appreciate that. Thank you, Reed.
You bet. Thanks much, Clay. Since I came to the department, one of the things I've been interested in is trying to streamline the licensing process and the renewal licensing process for the bail bond agencies. And this, what you have on this paper here that was sent out with the email is sort of the culmination of that effort. The changes, the really kind of remarkable changes, I think, are twofold. The first one concerns property-backed bail agencies. right now, those agencies have to supply a statement from a CPA, as well as a lot of other documents, tax reports, title reports, appraisal reports, tax notices. And so what we've done is tried to narrow that down and figured that if everybody has to supply a CPA statement anyway, why not just make that CPA statement address what we're trying to get at, which is that the property-backed people have enough assets to meet the requirements of the statute. And so that's what the statute says. It says basically if you're a property-backed agency, you have to, for your type of agency, you really just need to supply this CPA statement that you would have to provide anyway under the old regime. The other thing I think that's remarkable here is that you all know that there are bonding limits that each agency has to stay under or go right up to, and what I've done is move those bonding limits from the rule where they now exist, put them in statute, and just require everyone as part of their licensing renewal to confirm that they meet those bonding limits, whatever they may be, depending on your particular agency. Those are the two remarkable points, I think. The other ones are, I think, fairly self-explanatory, but I'm here and I'm happy to answer any questions or criticisms or suggestions that the board may have. And so I'll turn it back over to you, Clay.
Okay. Excuse me if this is an ignorant question. It just popped off the top of my head when you started mentioning something about bonding limits and in the process of renewal and whatnot. Are you saying that you'll require us to basically show how much bail we have out at the particular time of renewal? Is that what you're implying?
Yeah. That's what it is.
And you'll just, I suppose, take our word for it.
Well,
you understand what I'm saying? I mean, how, I guess you would randomly audit whether or not we were saying what we're saying. First of all, it's very difficult for us to determine.
That's right. And I
saw that black and white.
Yeah. I think what we're going to have to do is pick a point in time. And I think that time is as of, let's see, I can't remember the date, but I think what we'll need to do is pick a point in time where everybody can go back to that particular point in time and look at that and see where they are as that particular point in time. Give you a chance to do a sort of
coming up with a real-time number is next to impossible.
Sure. Yeah, you're right. I agree with that. And so that's a good point, and maybe, I don't know if that, I thought, let me make sure that gets in here. I'm suggesting if everybody has to have their applications in by July 15th, would June 1st be a workable date for everybody? That'd give you 6 weeks or so to look back and figure that out.
Well, for some companies that might be the case, but I can tell you for my own company, I will have to review thousands of cases in order to come up with that number for you.
Okay.
I'll tell you this, you know, being diligent, I'll already foresee that this issue is coming up, and I'll try and have myself a running number so that I don't have to go back and invent a number out of the thin air come time for renewal. So that would be the smart thing for me to do, so.
Sure. But, you know, the department wants to be flexible and reasonable with this. I'm not here to cram anything down anybody's throats. And so if you guys have a different date, if you think 2 months would be better, that's fine too. I just like to know what might be reasonable, a reasonable amount of time for everybody to figure it out and get it together so they can certify that they've complied.
I appreciate that. My assumption is that maybe the folks at the UAPBA will probably have some discussion and digest this a little bit, and within short order, I imagine you'll hear what the industry thinks about that or not, I suppose.
Okay. Sounds good.
I'd like to put my two cents worth in. This is Kurt.
Yes. Thank you, Kurt.
Reed, how are you?
Doing well, Kurt. Thank you.
I'm just a little bit concerned that you want to shift this from rules to statute, mainly because as a concern just came up, you're probably going to need a little bit more flexibility, at least for the next couple of years until everything gets smoothed out. So I'm thinking that it'll be smart to keep it in rules so that it's easier to make changes during the year instead of having to wait for the legislative session once a year.
Well, that's a valid point, Kurt. I think that the statute just talks about the standards themselves, and I don't think that those have been changed for many years. But
make sure that within the statute it states that the department shall promulgate the rules to make it work and make it a viable method.
Got it. I will do that. Thank you. And you know what? I'm going to give some more thought about this idea of putting it back in the rule. I will give that some more thought. Thank you, Kurt.
Thank you, Kurt, for having the insight on that. That's just something that's beyond my scope. I know that to understand. I appreciate your insight there.
It helps to have been the chair of the Administrative Rules Committee. So,
yes, it does.
This is Dominic Cinnone. I kind of concur with what Clay said, Reed. Is there really isn't an avenue for an agency to obtain that number that is plausible? I mean, it's almost physically impossible. If there's any volume, you know, I mean, if there's the company that has 100 clients, but there's companies that have thousands of clients, and the court records aren't accurate enough for us to determine that number at any given time. I mean, with any degree of certainty is what I'm saying. I mean, there's a number out there, of course, but it's almost impossible to gather the intel.
Well, these bonding limits are on the books right now as a rule, and I would think that people are making an effort to comply with that. At least I would hope.
Yeah, yes, rules have the effect of law. So,
everybody, I assume, is already doing what the rule says. And so I'm assuming that there's already a process in place at every agency to keep track of this information.
Keeping a running tab.
Right. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe I'm catching some folks off guard. I don't know.
You might be a little bit wrong in that, Reed, that I believe that most companies' bond amount is far in excess of what they actually have out. And that's personally my case. I mean, I would have been able to fight this whole 206 thing if I had my full bond amount out, the kind of money I would have made from that. But that's just simply not the case. I mean, I've never been anywhere even close to my full bond amount.
Okay.
But even years ago when we went through this with other auditors trying to make us, jump through that hoop and show them a number, it was not even close. And that hasn't always been the case, because I do know that the reason why the issue even came up is because there was suspicion that so-and-so was over their bond. And so that was what the catalyst for us to all have to prove that we weren't, But It turned out as an industry-wide, almost nobody was over their bond. Well, and also, not to get into a whole other tangent, but to be honest with you, the bond amount is really irrelevant for the function of a bail bond company. And what really matters is how much forfeiture do they have and whether or not they pay their forfeiture. You know, that's really the relevant part of a functioning bail bond company, just from a bail bonds perspective, not from a rules and insurance department's perspective. I understand you have your angle, but from an operator of 20 years, it really isn't that relevant, that bond, that number that you're discussing, you know?
So Clay, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that we really shouldn't have bonding limits because A, it's really difficult to determine whether you are in compliance or not, and B, they don't really tell you anything worthwhile.
Absolutely. Yes. I would 100% concur with that. I think that as a regulator, you would be more concerned about one's forfeiture rate and whether or not they pay their forfeitures rather than how much bail they get out at any given time, because the risk of a company losing, you know, say their bond amount was $10 million, the risk of a bail bond company losing that $10 million is not really a reality. They're going to lose it at $5,000 increments or $10,000 increments, not, you know, millions at a time.
Okay. I understand.
Just to help give you perspective, I mean, this has been a little bit of an issue within the industry for years, you know, on that. I know some competitors might like to use that as a tool against others to try and limit the amount of business they were doing or whatnot. But like I explained, the reality of it is the bond amount is, like you've described or so eloquently summed up, is really not as relevant as what I described as the forfeiture rates and whether they pay those forfeitures, you know, so.
Could I ask for input on that from the other agencies' representatives on the board? I would like to get their input, too. Dominic, I think you...
Tony, do you have an opinion on the matter? Or?
I agree, Clay, with what you've been saying. I know that I'm nowhere near my limit and never have been. But also, just so everyone understands, that limit, that number changes every single day. Because on any given court date, I could have 30 bonds exonerated. And in that same day, hour by hour, I could add 3 or 4 bonds that I've written that day to that number. So that number will change daily, no matter what you do. And that's why it's so hard to track, because, you know, the court could exonerate 50 of my bonds in one day, and they could do 2 of them at noon, and they could do the other 40 at 2 o'clock. And that would be a huge number if they did 50 in one day, which is definitely possible with all of the courts. So, and I could write 10 bonds, not these days, but in one day. So that number then would grow by 10. You know, and if it's a $100,000 bond and a couple of $10,000 bonds, and, you know, that number's always going to fluctuate every single day, and that's why it's so hard to track. And the ones that the court exonerate, you don't know. You have to individually look all those up as you're getting rid of your cases. And so, you know, even if you say you have a number, that number's changing every single day.
Sure. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Tony.
I'll concur with Tony, but and just to remind Tony and anybody else that had any concerns, Reed was also presented a great suggestion and resolution to the notion of how much bail do you have out at this any given moment. That maybe we could retroactively say, how much bail did you have out on, you know, say, you know, given date 5 months ago or 6 months ago, and that would be a much easier number to you know, to nail down, to say this is how much I had out. But like everybody's kind of explained, it's a revolving account, basically. So the balance is going to change constantly, you know.
Okay.
So even during the time of trying to submit your report, the number would change, you know.
Sure. Now, could I take some more time on this? I have another question.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Yes.
Thank you. So on this issue of on this matter of the bonding limits really not telling you anything, As I understand it, you're saying that it's more important, almost everybody is always below their bonding limit, and it's more important to know whether they're paying the forfeitures.
Yes. Or even a risky operator that may, I mean, you can't always tell the future, but I think with somebody's track record, you might be able to determine whether or not they were a potential risk of having too much forfeiture issue or something to that nature. I mean, that's happened in the past where operators have, you know, call it whatever you want, have functioned in a matter that didn't facilitate them operating for very long, you know, so they operated poorly and then went out of business. And I think that in an audit or in some of these renewal processes, if the insurance department was paying more attention to forfeiture rates, how much forfeiture a company has instead of how much bond they could possibly have, that would probably be more telling and more informative on making a decision about how to handle a company mm-hmm. in the future, as far as, you know, whether or not they were going to be solvent,
right,
in my opinion. And so, I mean, there are companies out there that have zero forfeitures, you know, literally. So, and then other companies out there that have paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in forfeiture.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like maybe sort of a warning sign is somebody who doesn't pay a forfeiture judgment, and then at that point we want to go in and see if they're meeting the if they're above the ratio, above the limit.
I mean, that might be the avenue for the insurance department to say, all right, you're above your limit and now we need to take action. But again, I'm saying that, you know, my position is I don't believe the limit is so relevant.
Okay.
And not too many people are at their limit. So
okay.
You'll find that. So
okay.
A company can be insolvent and be insolvent with $100,000 of forfeiture, even though they have a $10 million bond.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yes, I got it. Yeah, I got it. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for humoring me and explaining to me. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if anybody has anything to add as far as bail bond members, if you have anything to add to the discussion we've just been having, I'd open the floor to any comments.
This is Kurt. That means that there may be a consideration of removing that from actual statute and of naming actual limits, or to say that can't exceed that, or I don't know. I haven't seen the actual statute, so I can't say, but to keep it in just faster flexibility. And I'm kind of thinking perhaps maybe the idea of maybe each agency submitting an affidavit at renewal time that they have made every effort not to exceed their limits during the past license period, subject to random audits by the department.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the direction that we were headed. You're right, Kurt, about having it in statute. I think it's sounding more and more like maybe it'd be better just to keep it in the rules. So thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Kurt. Well, that was it, new business. And so we'll move on to old business if there is any.
Just really quick before we move off the subject, Reed? Okay.
Yeah.
So these are, if I'm reading it right, these are just proposed rule changes to kind of streamline what you were saying is for our renewal process, right?
Right.
Now, at what point are we going to make a concrete decision of right way to do it or the wrong way to do it?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. The only real concern I've heard expressed is the one about the bail bond limits. And so I'm thinking I'll take that out. We'll just leave it in the rule, and we'll keep everything else as it is in this document. that was attached to the email notice.
Roger that.
Unless I hear, Clay mentioned something about another organization getting a hold of me, and I'm happy to entertain comments from that organization too. But no. Whatever we do, you know, I'll certainly send it out before the next meeting, because we have to have our proposed legislation done in November. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Thanks for the clarification.
Great.
Thanks, Dominic. And Reed may know more than we know, and know that we're going to all report zero on our next renewal anyways on how much bond we have out.
we're all trendsetters now.
Clay, this is Dion Flannery. I had a question for Reed.
Yes, please, Dion.
Reed, so I appreciate you going over this, and I've read the email and looked at all the documents. I guess my question is, as far as surety-backed companies, are we still just going to submit our qualifying power with our renewal? Does nothing really change for us?
That's right. Nothing has changed for you. It just, there wasn't really anything specifically that said that in the code, and so that's one of the changes that we made. But you're right, Dion. Nothing changes for you.
Okay, and I appreciate you taking time to learn this. I've been in a situation before where we've had to try to show how much Bell was out, and it was a tough task because there were plenty of cases. The judge notifies us if somebody fails to appear, but we get no notification once the case is adjudicated, and so we had a lot of cases where the case was actually closed, had been closed for months and months, but the bond was never exonerated. The case was just closed, so it showed as open liability when it actually wasn't.
Oh.
And hundreds of them, hundreds and hundreds of them. And so I appreciate you taking the consideration to look into this, because we would have to work very closely directly with the courts to even determine some of this stuff. But again, I concur with everybody else. Nobody that I'm aware of even gets close to their limit.
So in the same lines, Reed, this is Dominic, we went through this issue in the past where, you know, that so-and-so was either close or over their limit, and after review, they weren't even close, because it was just under the fact of the guys that courts weren't arbitrarily exonerating the bonds upon closure of the case, not because they were doing it on purpose, it was just an oversight.
Oh, okay.
So the court docket isn't accurate. The company's outstanding limit isn't accurate, and it's all up to the court. And our company in general tracks all of our cases, so if we see a bond that's not exonerated, we call the court and ask them to exonerate it. But in the instance where there's thousands of them, it's almost impossible to do it accurately. I mean, it can be done, correct, and Dion's gone through that process before, but the accuracy of it is still a moot point, because some courts are astute about it, some courts are not astute about it. We have zero control over it.
Yeah, problem you're in.
When we went through that situation, it took us about 8 weeks to go through everything. And after we contacted the court and got the bonds exonerated that had been closed without exoneration, it was like a $4 million difference.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Perhaps, this is Kurt again, perhaps we need to get the courts involved in the discussion, because it sounds to me like they have some culpability here in notifying statuses and that. I think J.C. Skinner is still with the courts, isn't she?
I don't think so, but I think she's in private practice now.
Yeah.
Oh, is she? All right. But, well, perhaps we ought to invite them to participate in the discussion.
Yeah, we don't like to discuss anything with bail bonds these days, so the insurance department will probably have to take that fight up.
Well, that's what I mean. Have the insurance department contact them and say, hey, we have a serious problem here. How can we get the courts, the administrative office of the courts to help us, keep the numbers in an orderly fashion?
Right. Kurt, you bring up a good point. I believe the court has the ability to produce a number for you right now, Reed. It would just be up to us to dispute it. Because, their number is going to obviously be not real because of all the reasons that people have discussed before as far as bonds being exonerated or should be exonerated and whatnot. But I'll assure you now the court's going to give you a number by tomorrow on every one of us.
Okay.
On what we have out, so.
Okay.
I don't think that number is going to be one bit accurate for most of us companies, but
their numbers still aren't going to be accurate because of the fact that they're if it hasn't been exonerated, it's still an oversight that's still going to be on the books.
Yeah. Well, that was a little bit of what happened before. We ended up in a practice of trying to get as many bonds as we could exonerated from the courts that needed to be exonerated, and I'm sure the courts didn't appreciate that at all. A flood of bonding companies trying to get bonds exonerated, you know.
That's what happened with us, is we completely overwhelmed the court, and they were not excited about it, so it was a real problem.
It put us in the position of telling them that they didn't do their job,
I'll tell you that right now, they don't.
All right, thank you very much. I understand where you're coming from, I think. I appreciate this.
I'd reiterate what others have said before. We very much appreciate your taking an interest in our industry and wanting to help improve the process, and we do identify that you are making an improvement in the process, because other changes you've made on our statutes that have streamlined things have certainly proved to be beneficial and better for us. So I have 100% faith that your interest is to make things better for us and improve it. So I appreciate and commend your efforts to do so.
Thank you, Clay. That's very nice of you. Thank you very much.
And this is Dionne Flannery. I agree with Clay. Reed, you've been fantastic to work with, and I appreciate your advice and the things you have looked at things we haven't even considered, and it has been very appreciated.
Well, thank you, Dionne. Thank you very much. Very kind.
I have to echo that, Reed. This is Kurt. You've been great to talk to, unlike a lot of legal people in various departments, you've been good to work with.
Thank you, Kurt. That means a great deal. Thank you.
Although he deserves enough about telling Reed how great he is. I'm only being a smart aleck. I wouldn't want to prevent anybody from letting Reed know how good he's been for us.
So. Rightfully so, being a smart aleck. So we still have the discussion of the meeting requirement, I guess. I don't know if you wanted to go on to that, Clay, or what
Please,
you want
to do. I didn't catch that either. I just noticed in your notes that you said that you weren't going to address it in your notes, that will be discussed during the meeting, and I think that must have come up during last meeting. I'm not quite sure.
This is Kurt again. We did discuss that briefly, but we were running out of time, so I asked that to be put on this agenda to have a brief discussion, because we're just running out of time last time. If I can continue, there were agencies that kind of felt that one meeting a year was a little bit onerous, but, you know, the more I think about it, it's a lot easier than having to go through CE credits and all this kind of stuff and tracking all that. Especially when it's just a single aspect of the department and the industry overall, just one meeting is not an onerous thing to have to comply with. I think the one meeting factor, whether it be call in or attending in person, is as long as we can document that they've been they participated. I see no problem.
I'll concur with you. I think a one meeting a year is a good thing, whether you want to do it or not. You get something out of it most of the time. I thought this in years past when we weren't doing it, but a teleconference option for those who may be remote in the state should be an option, because I understand the dedication it takes for somebody to leave their business to come up to Ogden, you know, just for a stupid 20-minute meeting to listen to me rabble down these agendas sometimes might make you wonder why did we have to jump through that hoop. But if you were to make a phone call in, I think that would, you know, sure alleviate some of that issue, you know, because I do know we have folks out in the Uinta Basin and whatnot, so.
And to make sure that they were present on the call at the beginning of the meeting and at the end of the meeting, so you know that they were there through the entire meeting.
Steve, you might be able to answer this. Is there an opportunity for me to, I mean, suppose we get past this COVID situation and we start having our meetings back down there at the Capitol, would there be an opportunity for me to have a dual situation where I could have a remote location or anchor location statement as well as I'm not even quite sure what I'm exactly asking. I guess basically, in layman's terms, can we do like a call-in and a meeting at the Capitol at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perry can answer that.
Well,
Legally, yes, we can. Okay. Steve, you can tell us if we have the capability, but years and years ago, the bail bond board did approve electronic meetings.
Okay.
And then, yes, we do, over at the normal room that we're always in, we can get a phone line in there. Yeah, we can do that.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the next step would be. If somebody would like to motion that we move towards having that as an option for our future bail bond oversight meetings, I think that would maybe alleviate a lot of people's concerns with having to come to a meeting when the reality is being at a meeting takes a lot of us off of our job and away from our business. So, calling option is probably welcome.
And to make sure that it is a principal of the agency, not just a secretary.
Okay.
Yeah, Clay, could I speak to that for a minute? This is Reed.
Yes, please, Reed.
Right now, the statute says that the principal has to attend the meeting. It seems to me we could just change that language to say attend or participate by telephone. Would that be acceptable to everybody?
And must be present for the entire meeting.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know, would we do a roll call at the beginning of the meeting and then one again at the end to ensure that? Correct. Or something, I suppose?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I can put that in the statute, and then we'll be set.
Well, I think that would probably alleviate most of the concerns, because I'm sure that's where a lot of it's stemming from. I mean, I'm sure some of it has to do with having to listen to me, but most of it must be having to go away from your job. So, was that considered old business?
That was part of the new business.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So moving on, if anybody has any comments, any people in the audience, any bail bondsmen have anything to say about that?
Beyond Flannery, unfortunately, I have something to say.
I think that's a great idea. Another thing that maybe we consider, I know that we talked about how you're going to prove you were at a meeting and we were going to do an affidavit. If we allowed people to attend over the phone and in these meetings, when the minutes come out with the agenda, it shows who attended. Reed, would that be an okay thing to send in, the form we get from the insurance department that shows who was in attendance at those at that meeting?
You know, that's up to the board. We could certainly accept that.
I just feel like that would be an easy way to show, here's my name, you know, on the minutes of who attended, and that would certainly be an easy way to show that you were there when you renewed your license.
Well, I was frankly just thinking that it would be part of the renewal application. There would just be a statement on the application that says a principal of this agency attended or participated by telephone for the entire meeting, for one meeting during the past year. And then somebody would sign it, and we'd be done.
You would want the date. You would want the date, which meeting it was, so that you can verify that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read something about us having to do an affidavit saying that we were there, so I thought this might make it a little more simple, but if all we have to do is say we were there and a date, that will work as well.
I think that the insurance department had to jump through hoops and jump over rivers to figure it out this past year, correct? After the applications were submitted?
Yeah.
And I think that was the issue, is that it was very difficult for them to verify that someone from those agencies was there, and then the ones that weren't were obviously there at that last meeting to say, I am here, as I recall.
Exactly. So for us, it would be easier if you filled out the application and signed it rather than had us having to search through the minutes and then find your name and check off a box saying that you did it. It would be easier for us to trust that you're honest and that you attended a meeting like you say you did in the application.
And then you'd have the ability to audit based on our roll calls and whatnot, I suppose.
That is a great point.
I'm absolutely fine with that. I do agree with Kurt's idea that a date of which meeting you attended would be helpful to narrow it down. I mean, so. Okay. Any other comments on attendance requirements? I'm trying my hardest. Let's move on to old business, maybe?
Hey Clay, one thing. Since we don't have any comments, mm-hmm. I think it'd probably be a good idea to have a vote on that one.
Sorry, my mind's drawn a blank. A vote to...
Since it's involving us putting something in statute, is that correct, Perry and Reed? Would we want to vote on that?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, so would anybody like to make a motion that we have a space on our applications that we will sign and date the time we went to a board meeting to indicate that we've fulfilled our requirements for attending a meeting for the year?
That it wasn't a principal who did that for the entire meeting.
Yeah, it would have to be a principal, yeah.
I'll make that motion. This is Kurt.
Hey, Kurt.
This is Tony. I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, it
looks like we have a all in favor vote to explore that idea and see if we can resolve our issues that way. Old business. Is there any old business to discuss? I haven't any on my agenda here.
No.
Let's move on to other business. If there's any other business that anybody would like to bring up, this would be the time to do so. Okay, I'm going to do another roll call here to see if we've missed anybody. It's going to be a little bit streamlined. If I've got you down as having got you here before, I won't call your name the second. Oh, actually, I do have to call your name to ensure that you've stuck around the entire meeting. So disregard what I'm saying here. I'm just going to go through the roll call as usual. So is 007 Bonds here? How about one got bail?
Patty Reed, still here.
Thank you, Patty. First out, bail bonds. Second chance, bail bonds.
Tony Cho, present.
Sportsman's bail bonds. A1 bail bonds. AA Rocky Mountain bail bonds.
Gerald Condor here.
AAA bail bonds. Aladdin bail bonds.
Oscar Gumbel is still on the call.
All out bail bonds. Eight bail bonds.
Yes, Robert May, bail bonds.
Available bail bonds.
Vivian White, available bail bonds.
B&B bail bonds. Bad Boys bail bonds. Beehives bail bonds. Bonds Are Us.
Allie, Bonds Are Us.
Breaking Bad bail bonds.
Christy Ellis, Breaking Bad bail bonds.
Peter Post, Jailbusters bail bonds.
What's the name of your bail bond company?
Dewey's bail bonds.
Dewey's bail bonds.
Fast and Furious bail bonds. Freedom bail bonds. Gordon's bail bonds. Granite bail bonds. High and Mike's bail bonds. Lucky bail bonds.
I'm still here.
Massey's bail bonds.
Yeah, so Massey's bail bonds.
Pappas bail bonds.
Get Pappas loud and clear.
Steve's bail bonds.
Steve's bail bonds. Hi, Stevens.
Price bail bonds. Uinta Basin bail bonds.
Patty Reed, still here.
Utah bail bonds. Or Extreme bail bonds. All All right. Well, I'd like to thank everybody with their patience with me to get through this meeting, and if we can get a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. This is Kurt.
Okay, Kurt, motion to adjourn. Anybody second?
Looks like we can't adjourn.
No. Yeah. We'll just stay here until we get one.
Tony Cho, second the motion.
Thank you, Tony. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anybody opposed? All right, well, thank you, everybody. Stay safe and have a happy holidays.
You too.
Thanks, Mike.